My friend is Nanette Evans. She is the executive director of CASA of Williamson County. First off, morning.
Good morning, Tom. I'm so happy to see you today.
Well, see, that she says that because she doesn't know what I'm going to do yet.
Oh, no.
My plan was I'm going to abuse our personal relationship. That's my plan.
Okay. All right. Let's do this.
Okay.
By the way, happy to see that you're wearing blue. Child Abuse Prevention Month. Wear blue. See? I like it. You're already in theme.
All right.
It's, so good.
It's the pink shirt that I'm also supposed to wear today. Today's Wear Pink Day.
Oh, dang. Well, you can do a quick change.
All right. So I and Robert meet every day and we talk about what's the story. What's the story? What do people want to talk about? Sometimes it's things that people don't know about.
Okay.
And we do because we hear it in the big story. You know, it's out there if you look.
Right.
And so I started looking at an expert on domestic violence and people who are domestic violence counseling.
Okay.
I called an organization here in Southern Illinois that you work with, and they said, we don't have anybody because we're, quite frankly, too busy. Give us a couple. 3 days later, they've contacted their associated organizations in three other states. No, we don't have anybody. That's how busy we are.
Wow. Yeah, I believe it.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's the why I called you, because I knew you would know.
Because I wouldn't be busy?
No. That you would know, that you'd make, first off, you'd make time for me. That's
absolutely
me abusing your friendship.
No.
But at the same time, I knew that you knew this. Now, here's the thing, the problem I have. I read through the police reports and the arrest records every day.
Right.
I read through everything that's applied to me from local law enforcement about domestic violence. And with my past experience as being a child and being in these situations, I know that every time, not every time, but when I read these reports, there's somebody that's included, and their name is not mentioned. And they're the children of Southern Illinois.
You are exactly correct. Yes, sir. That is, I believe that they are overrun. And it's so funny that you bring that up, because we had a couple instances with a couple cases just over this last week where we're struggling to find domestic violence services to provide for our parents, you know, that we have in our cases, because everyone is overrun. We just don't have the services. We don't have the people
and
down here to do it.
It's not just here.
No, it's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
Now, some of this, and you and I talked about this during COVID, because reported cases dropped.
Right.
But we knew the circumstances psychologically, people being in the same house together long periods of time, we knew it wasn't really the truth, but we knew there was a problem. Its exact nature, couldn't identify it. We're in that position now.
Correct. I mean, you know, whenever the numbers did drop after COVID, it's because the children weren't being exposed. There's no eyes and no ears out there looking and listening. They're at home. So, you know, we underestimate and undervalue teachers, daycare providers, people in the general public that are taking that step and making it their responsibility to call and to report these things. So now that the numbers are back up to normal, I say normal with air quotes, you know, we don't have the service providers to help and to help correct those conditions. So the service providers are just, they're lacking.
Because you're playing catch up.
Right.
Do you have a number?
Do I have a number?
Yeah, I mean, the numbers of how many kids you're helping now?
Yes. Since January 1st, we've provided services to 122 children. Last year, from January to the end of December, we provided services to 148, which was a little bit lower than the year before. I believe we had 167. And those are the ones that we're providing services to.
But you got 122 in the first quarter.
Yes.
See, because I have a tendency to want to do math.
Right.
It's not natural for people from Saline County to want to do math. But in this particular case, I do, because I know you can't say 122 times 1 hour for help.
Right.
Because that math's not right.
No.
I mean, do you have an estimate for every one of those children? How many hours a CASA representative is with them?
Generally, our CASA spend maybe anywhere from 8 to 10 hours a month. So it's not a lot.
Unless you just buy 122.
Right. But that's just with, you know, the child and the family. You know, you're not figuring in making the phone calls and talking to, you know, the different service providers and calling the teachers and checking and things along those lines. We generally see anywhere from 400 to 500 hours per quarter that's documented. Now, I know that my advocates are doing way more than that. But it's generally about that per quarter whenever I do my reports.
I want to talk more about that in a couple of moments. I'm trying to qualify the problem, and I don't always do well in that respect, because our desire to protect the children to some extent stops us from understanding the predicament so many of the children are in, because we want to protect them. When I read those arrest reports and I say, Bill Smith, domestic violence, this, you know, maybe aggravated assault and maybe some other physical charges in there, it never talks about whether there's a child involved.
Right,
you know, maybe I
yeah.
see somebody's 22, 23, I'm less likely to think there's a kid involved. I start seeing 30 and up, I start thinking more kids, you know.
Sure.
But it can be anybody. I know that. But, you know, the unnamed is how today I'm going to refer to them. Those are the ones that I'm most concerned about. Those are the kids that are under your care. We don't know the trauma they've been put through. And in some cases, you know, somebody's gone to jail during that arrest. Maybe the other person's unable to care for the child. Where does the child go?
That's so true. And that's, we also get the jail list, obviously, to take a look and see if our parents that we have existing cases on are back in jail, or if we have some new ones coming up for what we call a shelter care. So in a situation where you have an arrest like that, say with domestic violence or, you know, substance abuse issues, whatever the case may be, those children, if they don't have a caregiver, say, you know, mom isn't able to give a name of someone that they can give the child to, you know, safely, they put them in foster care. They remove the children from the care of their parents. You know, there's an immediate and urgent necessity, you know, to protect them. So they put them in foster care. It might be with grandma and grandpa or an aunt or an uncle or even a neighbor across
but
the street.
That used to be more prevalent than it is now, though, my understanding. That family member that's willing to step in is less likely to happen than it was, say, 20 years ago.
I don't know that I agree with that.
Good.
I don't think so.
Great. I find that encouraging.
So DCFS has also decided to create something called a fictive kin. So that's someone who doesn't isn't blood related, but it's maybe a teacher, maybe neighbor Sally across the street, or someone that child already has ties with instead of Mr. and Mrs. Smith, you know, across town.
Right.
Or so it makes it a little easier.
Right.
They used to have a godparent thing, but that had more of a religious connotation and the parents had to agree to it. With fictive kin, they don't. So the child can be placed with someone that they have some familiarity with and a little bit of comfort.
Yeah.
So it's better.
I do see the godparent thing.
Yeah.
I do notice that some take that very seriously and they're ready to go.
Right, right.
Now, here's a question. It's coming from a listener, and I know this guy personally, so I'm really glad to see him. Kevin just texted me and he says, how does a family become a foster parent family? I know this guy. I'd let him take care of my kids and my dog.
And your dog?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Right. Right. That's a big. You can take the kid, but the dog, not so much.
That's
him.
Big.
I'd let him take the kid and the dog.
Yeah,
so about somebody like that?
Sure. He would just need to contact one of the social service agencies, DCFS, Lutheran Social Services, Caritas Family Solutions. Let them know that he's interested. They go through a big, long process. I used to actually license foster homes.
Right.
So you go through a process, you kind of do an intake, and they kind of hold your hand through the whole thing. And then you can become licensed as a foster parent and take children.
A police officer has just texted me, former police officer.
Okay.
On the American Monument text line, he says, as a former police officer, I've sat with a child as long as 16 hours waiting for DCFS caseworkers to come. How long does it take to get a DCFS caseworker in most cases?
So that's really difficult for me to answer because obviously I'm not DCFS, but knowing, well, having been in this for 16, 17 years, in our area, we have wonderful caseworkers, wonderful investigators. I really think that we're really fortunate with the group of people that we have all working together here. Sometimes it can take that long. It really can,
well,
in order to get someone to respond and to find a home.
And with my experience, I've talked to Williamson County deputy sheriffs about this.
Right.
And they said, depends on whether it's 2 in the afternoon or 2 in the morning.
Right. You got someone's on call. They got to get up and get going and get all their stuff and their computer. If they're already in the field and they've got everything good to go, I mean, that's with anything, you know. So, yeah, I mean, it does take a while.
Right.
We're talking about children. We don't want to just take them and drop them off somewhere. I mean, this is a big deal. So,
well, and with DCFS record and the things that have gone on there, even more reason for concern.
Right.
Because there are people out there that They need to be vetted. That's the answer there.
Perfect.
How many CASA volunteers do you think you have right now?
Not enough.
All right. So how many?
I believe 52.
Right. Now, it takes a special person to do this.
Does it?
I think so.
Aww.
I'm not as patient as I think I should be.
Oh,
I love kids,
patient.
But there are some kids I just don't like.
So, you know, you don't have to like the child to want to keep him safe. You don't want to have to.
Motivates me, though.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to get along with the child. I mean, sometimes people are advocating for babies. You don't even make a connection with the baby.
All right. That's interesting. I never think about that.
Sure.
I never think about it. And I try to pride myself on thinking behind the curtain a little bit on this, right? But how come I don't envision a baby? Because I should be.
Yeah. I mean, the majority of our children are 2 and under.
Really?
Absolutely.
I had no idea.
Yes. The majority of our children that are in care are 2
All right.
and under.
So how do you advocate for a 2-year-old?
You just check on them. Talk with the foster parents. Make sure that the child is getting everything they need. They have the developmental assessments and physical assessments. So you're just keeping in contact with the service providers to make sure that the child is being cared for.
So I've got a preconception issue because I always think about
an 8-year-old.
Yeah, I do. I have a tendency to think about an 8 or 10-year-old toe-headed boy or girl,
sure.
Right? I have
right.
that. Remember. But I always seem to think about them as being in the jury box and CASA helping them in the legal process.
So what a CASA does, they go and they visit with the foster parents, make sure that the foster parents have support. I mean, they're taking care of these children, you know, that have problems and issues and behavioral issues and been exposed to domestic violence, been exposed to substance abuse. They're removed from their parents. They're removed from everything they know, good, bad, ugly, indifferent.
Grief.
Absolutely grief. They're struggling. They don't understand why this is happening to them. So that's
and sometimes
that's a big
blame
deal.
Themselves too.
More often than not. So, you know, you've got some behavioral issues. So we're trying to provide some support to these foster parents that are grandparents, aunts, uncles, fictive kin, whomever. But we're also talking with the biological parents. With the birth parents, we're trying to kind of help them along, help them to correct the conditions that brought these children in the care so that we can reunify this family. So we're talking with teachers, daycare providers, service providers, the caseworker. We're talking with all of these people. Then we create a report, submit this report around every 6 months to our judge, our assistant state's attorney, guardian ad litem, defense attorneys, so that we can give our perception and observations and recommendations for what we think this child needs. So, yeah, we are on the legal side of it because we are a party to the case. You know, we're court-appointed special advocates. We're court officers. But our job is way bigger than that.
See, and I had that tendency to think of it more in the courtroom. I really
right.
did in preparing the kid and, you know, if he's needed or she's needed to testify. I think about that. I you know, and I should have been thinking about this. It's deeper than that. Especially for the young ones who
sure.
have been isolated and torn out of their comfort
Generally,
zone.
The children don't appear in court. The children aren't there. But I don't really think they need to be. Now, when they're older, they can make the decision if they want to attend. But generally, they're not. I can only think of one instance off the top of my head in, you know, my 16 years where a child's had to testify. So they don't.
A lot smaller than I would have thought.
Right. Yeah. We don't want to traumatize them anymore. We don't want to do that.
Well, court's scary.
Right. Well, yeah. No kidding.
All these adults and they're all looking at you. Yeah. It's a scary thing.
And you do feel like, you know, these children do feel like it's their fault. They do feel like it's something that they've done. They feel like maybe they're saying something wrong or they're going to, you know, upset
trouble.
Their mom or dad or get in
and
trouble.
Get in trouble.
That's right. That's right. So, no, they generally aren't in court. That's why we are the eyes and the ears of the court. The judge needs us to go out and to give our, you know, assessments and observations, but we're also the voice of the child. So we step in and we tell the court what the child wants them to know. So we provide them a voice. We tell them what they want.
Meth.
It's gross.
Yeah.
It's destructive.
What roles it played in those, as you mentioned, 16 years you've done this. So you've really been here mm-hmm. while this thing really jump started and grew.
Yes.
So how has that changed what you do, and how much has it affected the numbers, you think?
I don't really see it that much anymore.
Really?
I'll be honest. No, I really don't.
You think it's burned through to a certain extent?
To a certain extent. I mean, it's always going to be there, but I think that we're dealing with prescription meds, domestic violence.
neglect through video games is something that teachers and school superintendents are telling me. They neglect, kids are neglected because we're going to go play video games all night. You just go do whatever you're going to do. I hear this more and more.
All right. Well, so...
It's not violence, but...
No, and I think we all neglect our children in some form or fashion.
Cell phones and social media.
But now, is that providing a safety risk? Sure. If they're younger, if they're, you know, two and below,
right,
and they're out wandering the streets in a diaper while you're in there playing video games and zombied out. But no. Are we neglecting them? For sure, yeah. But when I hear the word neglect, I'm thinking neglect to the level of a safety risk.
You do. You have a different connotation.
So, yes. Yes. It's a very different definition.
You've got a different threshold.
And I
understand that completely. It makes sense to me. What is it you need at CASA of Southern Illinois?
Volunteers.
You need people. You need human beings.
Yes.
You didn't say money. You said people.
I need people. We can only help as many children as we have available advocates.
We just don't have it. What kind of background do you find that works, or there isn't any real restriction?
There
you just
isn't.
Need to be a good human.
That's what I think is so great about my job. I see and hear really bad things. But man, I see and meet some really great people who volunteer their time, their emotions, their mental state to help a child and to give a voice and to try and put a family back together. That is so awesome. I don't think you have to have any background. You just have to be open-minded and care about kids.
Yeah, diligent.
Yeah,
you know,
that's really it. It's not that difficult. We give you all the training. We give you the support. Jennifer and Lisa and Joy in the office are wonderful. I mean, they're not going to let you fail.
What is Voices for Children Thursday, April 27th at 6 p.m. at the barn at Sycamore Farms?
I would love to know the answer to that, too.
Apparently, it's a fundraiser.
Oh, okay.
It's going to be coming up, among
other
things.
Well, that sounds exciting. That sounds great.
Somebody's been working too much.
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
All right, so what I customarily think of is the Garnaudy Golf Scramble, for one of the most important, significant financial fundraisers you have.
So that's changed, obviously, since the passing of Chuck, and then also with Brandon Zanotti having left the state's attorney's office. So I haven't really spoken with Mr. Hampson about that, so I'm not sure if they're continuing that this year or not. I know we did a golf ball drop last year, so I'm really not certain.
I'll ask Ted next time I get a chance.
Yeah.
I'm curious, too. Before I let you go, CASA of Southern Illinois, CASA of Williamson County, Director Nandad Evans, we've been friends for years. Told you I was going to abuse your goodwill today. This is something that nobody wants to talk about. But we need to talk about it. It's a public safety issue. It's about how people, you know, grow up to be maybe one of two different kinds of people at this juncture in their life on the outcome. And it's a tough one. So what you talked about people, but I mean, as a final note for what people need to know about what you do, what would you say?
We provide support and guidance and a voice for these children and someone to look to. You know, these caseworkers are overrun. These service providers are overrun. Our advocates are appointed to one child or a small sibling group. So we provide that support and that guidance for these families, be it the foster families, the birth families, the children, so that they can try and navigate through this crazy foster care and juvenile court system with someone there to hold their hand and to give them a little bit of a light at the end of the tunnel. You know, we're looking for permanency for these children. We don't want them to live in foster care. We want to provide permanency, whether it be through adoption, reunification, guardianship, independence, even for the older youth. So we're there to try and speed that along and we're that safety net. We don't want them to fall through the cracks, and that's so easy to do. We're that safety net. So, and we need advocates. We're doing a fast track summer training in June. So if they want to give us a call, we can get them set up and ready to go for that.
The reason you know I was looking that up is because it's in Tennessee.
Oh.
Apparently they've got a CASA there too.
Yes. Yeah, so there's a CASA of Williamson County in Tennessee, Texas, and Illinois.
Yeah, that's
so
where
maybe that's what it was.
That's what it was. It was Tennessee.
Well, but it sounds like a great fundraiser.
Sounds like
and
fun.
Best of luck to them.
Right. Thanks. I just want to get that square with you before I do that. If you're going, you're wrong. It's so nice that you didn't say that right to my face.
Hey, I don't know.
No, I just wanted to check. So, you know, I really appreciate you coming in.
Thank you so much. I always appreciate it.